everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Channel Chat. I'm Alicia Fioretta, Managing Editor of Channel Marketer Report, and today I'm being joined by Bruce Colbert, Chief Service Officer of the Pedowitz Group. Bruce, thanks so much for taking the time out to join us.
My pleasure, Alicia.
All right, well, you're really in the trenches of, you know, the B2B sales and marketing space, and one of the trends that we're seeing a lot is the adoption of marketing automation tools. So a good starting point for our conversation is, what do you think the current state of marketing automation adoption is like? And most importantly, how are organizations in the channel specifically taking advantage of these tools and technologies?
Right. So there's a couple questions embedded in that, right? So let's start with kind of, where are we with marketing automation overall? And I think what we see here happening in 2012, and I really believe this is kind of the year that, you know, enterprise firms, larger companies, are recognizing that, you know, marketing automation is not a nice to have, but a must to have. And it's part of their overall business application stack. So, you know, now it's becoming, you know, strategic at an information technology level. It's becoming strategic at a marketing and customer response level, and you know, and it's absolutely required for these organizations to meet the ever-present demanding, you know, B2B prospects, right? I mean, there's an expectation that, you know, when I ask a question, it gets responded to, and again, you know, the run-up over the last 3 to 5 years, kind of growth in this industry, if you will, particularly marketing automation and marketing automation with CRM. If you look at who's been, you know, kind of riding that wave, it's been primarily newcos and small to medium businesses and some enterprise, you know, corporations or companies that have been using it as kind of a differentiator, right? Or, you know, small businesses were using it as a way to look like a bigger business. And it became somewhat of a competitive differentiator of those folks who were early adopters and got out in front of it. And what we're seeing in 2012 is that clearly, you know, enterprise companies are saying, hey, I have to be able to be, you know, responsive through multiple channels. For me to be able to do that, I have to have a good dose of automation and marketing automation. And again, combined with CRM allows all companies that have a level of responsiveness they couldn't otherwise have without it. And, you know, as you take a look at kind of the impact on the channel, it varies, right? So, you know, you have kind of the, what we'll call the manufacturer and the distributor, or the manufacturer and the channel. And you certainly see probably more of the channel partners, you know, more aggressively adopting marketing automation to help them drive leads and, you know, create their own business opportunities, if you will, than you do actually seeing kind of the larger companies. And, you know, again, it's all kind of changing this year. So you probably saw more of the channel partners over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years in, you know, adopting, and now you're seeing kind of the, you know, the manufacturer come into play. And then you also see them now trying to figure out, how can I work with my channel partners and perhaps provide them content, provide them marketing messages that they can utilize in their lead generation programs, utilizing marketing automation. So there's kind of going from a, you know, channel kind of moved out, I think, a little bit faster or quicker. And, you know, again, it's not uniform adoption, but certainly adoption quicker than perhaps maybe the larger manufacturers. And now in 2012, everybody's recognizing that this is a strategic, mission-critical type of endeavor, and I see more collaboration between manufacturer and channel partner and trying to figure out how to use marketing automation and how can they support the channel being successful in those efforts. So I see more of that this year than I have, you know, in the whole industry over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. I guess marketing automation is about 9 or 10 years old if you kind of look at its origin. So this seems to be the year where people are starting to connect those dots.
Yeah, absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, you touched on how marketing automation is becoming a must-have rather than a nice-to-have. So, and I know the Pedowitz Group works with organizations in terms of, you know, deciding on marketing automation and rolling it out. So do you have any tips you can provide to companies that are looking to implement marketing automation but don't know, you know, which platform is best or, you know, how to roll it out effectively?
Sure. And this is something that we do, you know, quite often with our clients. And, you know, the first thing we try to, you know, get them to do is to reflect on what kind of impact, you know, what kind of impact do they want to make on their business? What processes, or sometimes we call use cases, you know, when we work with our clients, we collaborate with them. But if I was just kind of independently advising anyone, right, I would say, you know, look at the broader topics of revenue marketing, revenue performance management, which, you know, requires a heavy dose of marketing automation integrated with CRM, and see what some of that potential is before, you know, actually making a decision relative to any specific solution. And what we always try to get our clients to do, and again, I think it's always a good suggestion, is to kind of map out your use cases. What is it that you're trying to impact? Are you trying to, you know, and take it from a channel perspective? Am I trying to be able to get qualified leads to the right channel partner quicker? And do, you know, and how do I do that? Right? Am I looking for a closed loop feedback from my channel partner on what happened to that lead and did it turn into revenue? Am I looking at being able to create programs that drive demand for the channel? So me as a manufacturer might, you know, run marketing programs. And then drive demand for the channel, and the channel takes those leads and runs with them in the sales process. And what is it that I'm trying to accomplish, right? What are the use cases? What are the intersection points? This is another very big consideration before you start making decisions. What are the intersection points or integration points with other customer systems that are required to help you know, achieve those use cases? Because that will then help you determine, you know, what perhaps technology platform might be best for you. So given that you kind of, you know, familiarize yourself with the broader opportunity, figure out your use cases, then you know, there are probably 20, you know, what I'll call credible entrants in this, you know, in the market. There's probably some better than others. You know, there's some more fitted for large enterprises. There's some more suited for smaller businesses. There's some that work better with certain CRM systems. And certainly, you know, there is a good bit of a body of knowledge now that does exist on these marketing automation solutions. So with the knowledge of your use case, integration points, then you can go into the market and have some discussions. You can run a, you know, simple request for information and get, you know, feedback from vendors on how they would satisfy your use case. That's what I would recommend. And then from there, you can go into specifics about certain types of solutions from certain types of companies and how that will work, you know, in terms of pricing and delivery and support, which also are all very important areas to address.
Excellent. Definitely some helpful tips there, Bruce. And, you know, one of the common pain points that we're noticing in speaking to, you know, people in the channel as well as industry analysts is, you know, sometimes there's a disconnect between suppliers and manufacturers and their partners. So there's that lack of, you know, visibility and that lack of alignment. So that's a key struggle there. So, you know, can you share, you know, the most common obstacles and pain points for organizations in the channel, both the supplier and their partners, when they're striving to make that alignment more efficient, so when they're trying to align sales and marketing better, and most importantly...
You bring up an interesting question, right, because, you know, you're kind of trying to align, you're kind of trying to align sales, right, of the manufacturer and sales of the partner, or marketing of the manufacturer and marketing of the distribution or channel partner, versus perhaps sales and marketing alignment within, you know, one of those organizations. So there's like kind of a cross-company alignment that needs to happen. And where I see one of the biggest disconnects in the market today, you know, both as a provider of solutions to the channel, but also, you know, as a channel partner myself, right? I work with a number of the leading marketing automation solution providers. We're one of the largest, you know, value-added resellers in that area. And one of the biggest challenges is to have the sales team of the manufacturer and the sales teams of the channel aligned so that they're not cooperating. I mean, I'm sorry, they're not competing, I apologize.
Right.
But they are cooperating. And what we find too often is that, you know, the territories or the sales targets or the service targets are not well aligned. So basically what you're talking about, and since there's so much transparency, right, it's not like, you know, you could kind of send a lead to a channel partner, they could work it with a customer, and that customer may not come back to the manufacturer directly at some point later. And so what you want to be able to do is not have the in-house sales team jump all over that after the channel partner developed that lead, took it through a sales process. Again, because, you know, with all this open access and everything delivered online, it makes it so easy to disintermediate. And what has to happen is the manufacturer and the channel partner has to have very, very clear rules of engagement. They have to have very distinct territories and methods of selling so that they're not banging heads all the time. And what I see far too often is, you know, a channel partner will invest in selling a deal, and then the manufacturer will close the deal, and not by on purpose, right? Not, you know, they weren't collaborating to do that. It just happened that way because at some point in the buying cycle, right, the prospect went to the manufacturer, and so they didn't have any protected territories or defined rules of engagement. And guess what? I'm the in-house sales team. I'm taking that down, right? So that's one of the biggest areas. And so one of the things that I've seen to help overcome that, one, you know, I think you mentioned this a bit, is that there's got to be clear definition of territory, sales goals, service goals. That's another thing. There's a lot of conflict at times between, you know, what happens after the sale, who's going to sell the service, who's going to sell service that account over time, right? You want all that kind of, you know, defined in a set of rules of engagement or a service level agreement that sometimes we call it between in-house sales and marketing and the channel. What I've seen also, and these are progressive companies that really seem to have it down pat, somehow they figure out how to incent their in-house sales teams so there's some cross-measurement or some cross-incentive on the channel meeting their revenue objectives. So kind of reducing the conflict, if you will, and bringing everybody, both the channel and the company, into some common sales goals and being compensated or rewarded based on achieving both.
Yeah, absolutely. And that concept of channel conflict is something, you know, that, you know, we're seeing a lot of research on, and we're really seeing how organizations are, you know, tackling that issue and trying to make that alignment better across channel networks from the manufacturer and onto the partner. So that's definitely something to keep an eye out for. And, you know, obviously the Pedowitz Group is really in the trenches of, you know, helping these organizations, whether it's consulting, you know, demand generation guidance, sales empowerment, social demand gen, what have you. And you have this special framework called Revenue Marketing Transformation. So can you share a little bit about this framework and how the Pedowitz Group really helps guide organizations for more effective sales and marketing strategies?
Sure. And, you know, the revenue marketing, yeah, every consulting firm or agency has to have, you know, their quote-unquote methodology, right? And, you know, this is just a way for us to bracket a conversation about how companies need to be able to mature in their view of marketing and essentially move marketing from a cost center to a revenue center. And, you know, you don't just flip a switch and that happens overnight, but there's a, you know, a journey in which we say kind of from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it might take some time and it may take some steps for the business to be able to mature, you know, to fully be able to embrace, you know, revenue marketing and have that level of integration with sales and a common, you know, set of definitions and all those things so that the company can work together on common revenue goals, right, as opposed to siloed as we have in the past. And what we do with the Pedowitz Group is we work with our clients to look at six, what sometimes we call, you know, control factors or six areas of emphasis on which, you know, we look at how mature or what are the next steps a company should do. Let me just tell you what those six are. So overall, you know, what is your overall revenue marketing strategy? What are the terminal objectives? What are you trying to accomplish in terms of sales and order size and, you know, market share and those kinds of things? So what is it that between marketing and sales you're trying to achieve in terms of revenue objectives and how do you want to do that? What's the mix between channel and direct and those kinds of things? So, you know, you got to have an overarching strategy for achieving your revenue. But then you kind of drop down into some of the what I'll call tactical levers, right? You know, very, very traditional in terms of sense of people, process, and technology. You know, you got to have the right people. And in fact, today, if you look at most marketing organizations, they have some folks who are, you know, highly adept in online, some that are, you know, more traditional in their thinking, some of them who really never worked with sales before. This all has to be aligned around a common set of goals. So, you know, people need to mature, they need to have the right set of skill sets, they need to be compensated appropriately. You know, for instance, you know, is marketing compensated, you know, on sales? Okay, as an example. Similarly, you know, do you have the technology required? We've talked about marketing automation being an important part of it, but is marketing automation, you know, integrated with CRM? Is it integrated with content management? All these things that'll help the company achieve their revenue marketing objectives. Some of the other control points that we look at is, where are you in terms of content? You know, for B2B companies, content marketing is the word that people are using today, is extremely important because most buyers self-direct themselves through a buying process, utilizing information and interaction and engagement with content and third parties to find out information about, you know, the people they want to do business with. Right, so you have to have content that has to be aligned with the buy cycle. So some people, you know, may have little, but need to, you know, mature in that area. So we look at, you know, the overall strategy: people, process, technology, content, and then of course results. What are we measuring? Are we just measuring the amount of leads, or are we measuring, you know, leads to revenue and the revenue contribution from any given lead or any given campaign? Right, which would be a more mature, you know, look at how a company should view revenue marketing or revenue performance management. So we look at those six control points and we map them out on a maturity model, and then we help our clients take the next step. And depending on their readiness, their budgets, their businesses, they may take steps on all six of them. They may pursue steps in any given one of those particular environments to continue to improve their business's ability to achieve their revenue objectives.
Excellent, Bruce. Well, thanks for the great overview of the Pedowitz Group's framework. Definitely really hard-hitting concepts and principles, especially in this day and age. And, you know, due to the rise of content marketing and all of these other strategies coming to the forefront. And, you know, I'm sure you have your own inklings in terms of, you know, what marketing strategies or tactics may be coming more to the forefront, you know, during the rest of the year and into 2013. So what do you think channel marketers specifically should be keeping an eye out for in terms of, you know, demand gen strategy? Is it, you know, more of a focus on content marketing, as you said before, or are there, is it more leaning towards, you know, social media and more of those, you know, one-to-one strategies? What are your thoughts on that?
I think you brought up 2 points, content marketing and social media. I would say they kind of go together, right? And I think what you're going to, you know, you're going to continue to see, you know, this year to the next year is, you know, kind of a more proliferation of everything social, you know? And what that really implies and what that really does is it puts pressure on companies to enter into a dialogue with their prospects and customers throughout the buy cycle, right, through various different channels, many of which are now what we would consider social channels or social media, you know, whatever you want to call it. And then this in turn puts tremendous amount of pressure on the company to create that interaction, that dialogue. And how do you do that? Sometimes it's becoming available, right? We're having, you know, applications that allow you to interact with the company. A lot of that has to do with, do you have information and content? Are you out there, right? You know, are you out there to be discovered? And do you have useful education, useful information, useful demos, useful, you know, opportunities to interact with your company so that as I go through the buy cycle, I'm able to pick information, I'm able to have interactions and engagements with prospective, you know, providers of solutions at my pace, right, as a buyer. So in the social channel, we need more content. And so that's a big issue for us as marketers. Secondly, in the social channel, we need to provide more engagement opportunities for our prospects. And guess what? They just don't want to engage with sales and marketing. They want to engage with service if they have a service question. They want to engage with product management if they have a product management question. So what that means is we have to get more of the company involved in being available to engage with our prospects and customers as well. And that is a unique challenge because, you know, it's kind of like opening the kimono, right? You know, every, you know, you're making your whole company available, and you're doing it in a transparent way, and it kind of feels uncomfortable. You say, hey, I might not be able to control that. But if you don't provide that access, you're going to be rendered irrelevant. So it's a challenge that we have to deal with, and we have to deal with that as sellers in the marketplace today, right now. Because if I go online, I'm a B2B, you know, buyer, and I go online and I'm looking for, you know, information about a particular topic, and you don't show up in there, then you might be out of my consideration already, right? So again, access, content, engagement models, all that's really, really important to support this whole networked, empowered customer and a social environment.
Absolutely, Bruce. And, you know, obviously this is a bit of a challenge and a lot to digest for some of these companies. So it is a challenge in some respects, but it's also a great opportunity for them. So it'll really be exciting to see how, you know, the social space develops and how organizations really tackle content marketing and, you know, what methods they use. So that's definitely something to keep an eye
out
for.
Absolutely. And, you know, most B2B companies have said, oh, social's not for me. Well, that's not true. Because if you ask the buyers, you know, where they're formulating their opinions, you know, I think there was a recent study by IBM that said like 67% of them, you know, engage in a social channel somewhere during the process. So that's the facts, right? So we need to deal with that.
Absolutely, Bruce. Well, you know, we covered a lot of ground. You provided a lot of great insights in terms of what channel marketers should be keeping an eye out for, as well as, you know, how that whole alignment between sales and marketing across the channel can take place more effectively. So, Bruce, thank you again so much for taking the time out to speak with us, and thanks everyone out there for listening.
My pleasure. Thanks.